Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Solitary by Alexander Gordon Smith, performed by Alex Kalazic. To Dad, the architect of and the inspiration for so much of what is good in my life, I told you this was a proper job. Confession. I have a confession. I'm not a good person. I always said that I only stole from strangers, that I only took stuff they'd never really miss, money and electronics, and the sort of things you can't cry over. But that was a lie. I didn't stop there. I couldn't. I stole from the people I loved and took the things that meant the most to them. I didn't just break into their cupboards and drawers. I broke into their hearts and ripped out whatever I wanted, anything that would get me some easy money down at the market. So don't go fooling yourself that I'm a good person, that I'm an innocent victim, someone who didn't deserve to be locked up inside the hell on earth known as Furnace Penitentiary. I'm not. Don't get me wrong, I didn't kill my best friend Toby when we broke into that house. No, the black suits did it. They shot him, then they framed me for his murder. But I've done things that are just as bad. I've killed little parts of people. I've cut them up inside, hurt them so much they wish they were dead. There isn't time to confess everything, but I've got to get this off my chest. If I don't do it now, then I might never get the chance. Death's coming up fast. I can feel its cold fingers around my throat. 2 years ago, when I was 12, my gran died. Had a fit in the middle of the night and swallowed her tongue. Mum was devastated. Like any daughter would be. She cried for weeks. She didn't eat. She hardly spoke to me or Dad. She'd just sit and hold the little silver locket that Gran had left her, gently stroking the scarred and crumpled photos inside. I guess I don't really need to tell you what I did, but I'm going to anyway. I need to. I waited till she was asleep one night, 10 days or so after Gran had been buried. Then I sneaked into her room and pried that locket from her hand. 10 quid. 10 lousy quid is what I got for it. A handful of dirty coins for the only thing my mum had left of her mum. I watched the man I'd sold it to rip the photos out from inside and chuck them in the bin, and I didn't feel a shred of remorse. Mum knew I was the one who'd taken it. She never said anything, but I could see it in her eyes. There was no warmth there anymore, no love. It was like she looked right through me at a phantom over my shoulder, at the son she wished she could have, the son she'd lost forever. See what I mean? I'm not a good person. Don't forget that. It'll make my story easier to stomach if you know that I deserve to be punished for Toby's death, even though it wasn't me who pulled the trigger. That I deserve to be sent away for life in Furnace, deep in the rancid guts of the planet. And that I deserved everything that happened to me there. Because Furnace is no ordinary prison. It's a living nightmare perfectly designed for people like me. A place where freaks in gas masks, wheezers as we call them, stalk the corridors at night and carry boys screaming from their cells. Where those stolen kids are brought back as monsters, all rippling muscles beneath stitched skin. And where the same poor wretches are eventually turned into black suits, the warden's soulless guards. I saw it happen with my own eyes. I saw it happen to Monty. I saw what he'd become right before he died. So never let yourself forget that I'm a bad person, that all us cons are, even the good guys I met inside like Donovan and Z and Toby. No, not my old friend I'm supposed to have killed, a new friend with the same name. The four of us thought we'd found a way to escape, blowing a hole in the shipping room floor with gas smuggled out of the kitchen. But nobody can run from their own demons. Donovan was taken by the Wheezers the night before we broke, and as for the rest of us, me and Z and my new friend Toby, well, maybe even Furnace was too good for us. It was certainly too good for Gary Owens, the hard case head case who discovered our plan and followed along like a bad smell. No, Maybe our fate was to find out what horrors lay in the tunnels beneath the prison. Because that was our way out, the river that runs deep underground below the bowels of Furnace. We didn't know where it led to. We didn't care. Anywhere that wasn't Furnace was good enough for us. Or so we thought. Oh yes, beneath heaven is hell, and beneath hell is Furnace. But the horrors that crawl and feast beneath that? Now that's a truly fitting punishment for someone like me. So there you have it, my confession. It may not seem like the best time to share it, but it's funny what races through your head when you're plummeting into the darkness with only razor-sharp rocks and rapids to break your fall. The river. Falling into that river was like falling into death. The first thing it stole was my breath, knocked from me as I plunged into liquid ice. I felt my lungs shrivel, every last scrap of oxygen forced out. I tried to snatch in another breath, but all I got was cold water, dead fingers forced down my windpipe and filling me with darkness. The current was too strong, grabbing my body and tossing it from rock to rock like a rag doll. I felt pain tear up my left leg, then my head exploded into light and white noise as I was hurled against the jagged stone. I tried to swim, tried to grab the walls of the tunnel, tried to do anything other than be pounded into a bloody mess of flesh by the sheer force of the water. And at first, I thought I was succeeding, the pain leaving me and making me feel like I was drifting down a river of silk. Only I knew I was still being torn to shreds, the agony replaced by numbness and the kind of sickening warmth you know is just a trick of the mind to keep you calm while the last few drops of life ebb away. I stopped fighting it, giving myself up to my watery grave. It wasn't fair. Donovan, Z, Toby and I, we'd done everything right. We'd found the crack in the floor in room 2, smuggled in the gas-filled gloves from the kitchen and blown the place to splinters. We should have been free. The river was supposed to have been our own private expressway out of Furnace, carrying us laughing to the surface where we could bathe in starlight and howl at the moon and feel the gentle breath of night on our skin. But instead, it was like another of the warden's vicious beasts, a nightmare dog that held us in its foaming jaws and shook us until we were broken. I was going to die down here. I knew it. And suddenly, that didn't seem preferable to life in Furnace. Suddenly, I wanted to be back in my cell, in the light and the heat. Because even the most sadistic guard and the cruelest skull gang member could be bargained with. The river was a force of unrelenting fury that made even the warden seem human. I felt my body lurch, felt something in the blackness deep inside me snap. I tried again to breathe, my lungs bursting. The roar of the water began to fade as the river took my hearing. I wasn't scared. I wasn't sad. I wasn't anything. Because that was the last little piece of me that the river stole, bleeding my emotions out and leaving me an empty husk buried in a casket of ice at the bottom of the world. I wanted to open my eyes, but I couldn't. "You're dead," said a voice. Maybe someone else's, maybe my own. Dead people don't open their eyes. That made sense, but I still wanted to open them, only I couldn't quite remember how. I stared at the darkness, willing something to happen, praying for my vision to work. Very slowly, the black screen in front of me parted, a crack of weak golden light sliding into my brain. It carried no heat. But all the same, it began to chase away the chills inside my body. I could feel the numbness recede, and in its place came a deep, pounding agony so profound that I threw up. It was mainly river water, but I could feel something else vomited from me too, something barbed and heavy that had been wrapped around my guts ever since I'd jumped. I tipped back my head, my entire body gripped by freezing fire, and tried to focus on the light. I knew what it was, of course. It was the end. It was the afterlife calling me, the thing people see right on the edge of death, I didn't care anymore. It could take me wherever I deserved to go, just so long as it made the pain stop. I tried to hold out my hands, tried to welcome it, and for a moment the light grew brighter, so intense that I felt like I was bathed in gold. Then it snapped off, dropping me back into darkness, into pain. "You're bad," said the voice, my delirious mind. "And bad people don't go to heaven." I tried to scream, but it was too much. The world slipped, shuddered, and fell away. The trembling ground brought me back, pulling me up from the abyss. I didn't even try to open my eyes this time, just clung to the sensation of movement from beneath me, the slightest tremor which let me know I still existed. Although my body throbbed with pain, I could tell that I wasn't lying on the cold stone of the tunnel. Whatever it was soft and gave out a slight warmth, which I gripped with the last of my strength. I felt a weight on my shoulders, something pulling me toward it. For a moment, my mind snapped, and I was lying on my bed at home, just a kid snared by fever, my mum hugging me close and refusing to let go even when I tried to squirm away. Then I heard the roar of the river, and it all rushed back like a splash of acid. The explosion, the fight with the black suits, the sound of the mutant dogs as they tried to burrow through the rockfall behind us, then the leap into the unknown. I fought to bring back the memory of my mum, but it was gone, sucked into the shadows like every other part of me. I put my head against the soft ground, trying to burrow into the heat, trying to hide from the fear and the pain. But they found me, and once again, I was pulled into oblivion. Voices this time, hammered through my subconscious so hard that I could feel them as much as hear them. "Got to move! Not leaving him! Slit the little man! We're all gonna die 'cause of him! Can't go! You've got the only light! You can't! Gut him good! Better move or you'll get it too!" Drifting out, a black cloud settling over my mind again. I panicked. Something was happening. I needed to be awake. I fought against the agony, against the part of me that just wanted to fade away into nothing. The ground was moving, something holding me tight, thin arms around my shoulders. "Gary, back off! He can still get us out of here! Just give him another minute!" With each word, the shape beneath me vibrated. More memories came flooding back. Two friends, jumping by my side, and a third, Gary Owens, the psychopath who'd taken over the skulls, who'd already stolen God knows how many lives in cold blood. The thought of him pumped more adrenaline into me than the river had done, and this time I managed to open my eyes. The light was still there, timid and more silver than gold. It beamed out from a shadow beneath it, a black form against the grey walls that was moving my way. I blinked, seeing the red veins of my own retinas splashed across the darkness. The shadow focused, took shape, a muscular body with a dead face that sneered at me. "Just in time, little man," said Gary, spitting a wad of bloody phlegm onto the rock. I noticed that his face was cut up pretty badly, and a steady stream of crimson droplets fell from his left sleeve. "You messed up. Got us all killed." "Alex," said a voice from right behind me, making the ground tremble again. I looked up, feeling as though someone was pulling the tendons from my neck with a pair of red-hot tongs. C was sitting next to me, cradling me, his body still shivering. I tried to get up, but for a second he wouldn't let me, his arms locked tight. I placed a hand on his, squeezing as hard as my sprained fingers would allow, and he finally surrendered. "Jesus, I thought you were a goner back there," he said as I struggled upright. I saw you go head first into a rock. Did one of you... I stuttered, trying to keep as still as possible so that the pain wouldn't flare up again. It wasn't working. I put my hands to my temples and they both came away red.
I did, said Z. I managed to get a hand on you, drag you out.
What about Toby? I asked. There was silence for a moment until Z's shuddering sigh broke it.
There was no way he was going to make it, he said finally. He was messed up from that explosion. I'm sorry, Alex.
We should have left him up there, I said, the sadness clawing up from my stomach, causing as much agony as the wounds on my skin. The world spun again. Visions of Toby, the younger kid I'd met in Furness, bruised and broken on the rock, merged with visions of my old friend with the same name, shot in the head by the black suits and resting on his bloody bed. It was too much. The darkness of the tunnel creeping into my vision once again, the sound of the river muted.
Alex! Alex! Stay with us! Fight it!
The words brought me back again, each one a life raft that buoyed me up over the shadows.
Did we make it?
I repeated, staring back down the river. It might have been a product of my feverish mind, but I thought I could see a shaft of light punching down from the roof of the tunnel behind us. It was the hole we'd jumped through, and from it came the unmistakable sound of a siren.
Yeah, we made it, Gary hissed. Made it pissing distance. Great plan, little man.
Gary turned, and from the light on his helmet, I could make out that we were in a narrow stretch of tunnel, the foaming ribbon of water tearing by like it was trying to suck us back in. It curled off to the left, away from the strip of red rock we were on, not quite large enough for a bank, but low enough to scramble onto.
We're still too close, Z said.
What we do now, said Gary, limping across the narrow ledge until he was towering over me. You better tell me, or I swear I'm gonna bust your skull open.
Why do I have to?
I attempted, but Gary spat his answer at me before I could finish.
You dragged us down here. You get us out.
But there's no way they'll come after us,
I said, trying not to scream as I shifted my leg, needles in every nerve.
It's suicide. Not even the black suits would make that jump.
I knew as soon as I had said it that I should have kept my mouth closed. I mean, if I'd learned anything in Furness, it was not to tempt fate, because fate wants nothing more to do with people like me except to see us suffer. Something tumbled from the hole in the ceiling, a writhing form that spun through the flickering light and struck the raging torrent with a splash that was far too big for a man.
Oh, Jesus! They're not sending the guards!
Said Z, his voice breaking. Another form dropped like a dead weight, this one howling as it hit the water.
They're sending the dogs!
Hunted. I tried to get up, but my body wouldn't let me. Fortunately, Gary was more than happy to lend a helping hand. Two, actually. He ran forward and grabbed the collar of my tattered prison overalls, hoisting me to my feet and shaking me hard enough to make my teeth chatter. He pulled me close, glaring at me with the soulless eyes of a spider.
Where now?
He screamed, flecks of blood and spittle hitting my face.
You better have a plan, or I'm gonna feed you to them myself.
A plan. I could think of one. Lie down and die. It's all my legs wanted to do, just fold beneath me and leave me there for the dogs. It would be quick, I thought. Those immense canine jaws, the skinless muscles bulging, and those teeth. One bite, maybe two, and it would all be over.
I must have still been delirious, because the thought of being free of this bruised flesh almost made me giggle.
"Why don't you think of one?" I spat. "I got us this far. It's your turn."
Gary looked at me like he was going to rip off my head. Then, with a grunt of disgust, he shoved me backward. I stumbled, but Z caught me before I could fall. A wet howl bubbled from the water, too close.
"Come on, Alex," whispered Z in my ear. "We've got to think of something. I don't want to die down there, not like this."
His words cleared the madness from my mind, snapping me to attention. Gary's helmet lamp was veering wildly from left to right as he searched for a way out, but there were no exits, no passageways. The only thing I could see in every direction was rock. Every direction but one.
"We have to go back in,"
I shouted over the roar of the river.
"No way, man,"
Gary replied, his voice shaky.
"Almost died the last time. No way I get back in there."
"We don't have a choice," I went on, stumbling over the uneven ledge of the raging water. It pummeled the rock beneath my feet, desperate to get hold of us again so it could finish the job it had started. But there really was no alternative. In seconds, the warden's monstrosities would be on us.
"You want to wait here and get torn to pieces? We get back in. It will be easier this time."
Gary stomped toward me again, fists raised. But whatever he was planning, he never got the chance. A throbbing snarl rose up to our side, and he swung around, the lamp picking out two silver eyes and countless needled teeth emerging from the foam. The dog was straining to free itself from the current, its claws firing off sparks as they ripped across the rock. It howled, lurching its body onto solid ground, its back legs scrabbling for purchase.
"Go!"
I yelled, taking in a deep breath and throwing myself back into the flood. This time, I knew what to expect, bracing myself for the cold and managing to keep the air in my lungs. I felt the river grip me and pull me forward, but I spread my arms and curled up my legs, keeping one hand against the wall to my left to steady my passage. Behind me, I heard two more splashes. Somebody screamed, a choked cry drowned out by the rush of water in my ears. I turned, my shoulder grazing against the cheese grater rock. What little light there was from Gary's helmet lamp was half submerged, the glow like some deep-sea jellyfish. He was still beneath it, writhing in the water and trying to break back up to the surface. Z had disappeared. I couldn't see the dogs either, but that didn't mean they weren't there in the darkness of the tunnel. I fought the panic, trying to swim against the current toward Gary. I couldn't have cared less if he drowned, but we needed that light. I reached beneath the surface, grabbing a handful of cloth and skin and pulling as hard as I could. He bobbed up, gasping for breath and clinging to me with iron fists.
"Keep your head forward,"
I shouted, coughing as the river dipped and filled my lungs with water.
"Look for a ledge, a slope, anything."
I don't know if he heard me or not. His panicked breathing and muttered curses not even stopping when he slammed into a rock. He spun around, the lamp illuminating the way we'd come for the briefest of seconds, but leaving an image in my mind that lasted a lot longer. Z's panicked face, and behind him four glinting devil's eyes gaining fast. Too fast. I swerved to avoid another jagged black blade looming from the water, then clutched Gary's overalls as the river dropped again. The water closed in over my head as we plunged down a near vertical shaft, but it wasn't a long drop, and I managed to snatch another breath as it leveled out again. It was just as well, as dead ahead the ceiling of the tunnel dropped right to the surface, the river disappearing through a hole in the floor. Great. Death by mauling behind us, death by drowning ahead. And that was all I had time to think before I was sucked down into the whirling abyss. It felt like I was in a washing machine. My body spun so fast that I thought my limbs were going to fly off and my eyeballs pop out as it forced us deeper and deeper into the earth. We burst out in another stretch of tunnel. The water still flowing fast, but the river wider now, less furious. I saw Gary and clutched him, feeling his arms around me as though we'd been best friends for years. There was a choked shout as Z flew free, then a set of whimpered barks as the dogs drew breath. "There!" I said, taking hold of Gary's head and twisting it so that his helmet lamp was pointing at a section of broken wall to our left. A series of shadowed grooves led up to a narrow ledge high above the water. Steep, but we could climb them.
"Get up there," I said breathlessly. "Least till dogs have gone."
We let go of each other and swam for it, my limbs feeling as if they'd been hollowed out and filled with lead, my head chiming like I was standing right next to a church bell. The river almost dragged us past, but I managed to grab an exposed hook of rock and pull myself free of its icy grip. Gary was already ahead, scaling the wall with a speed born from terror. There was a cry from behind me, and I saw Z struggling against the current. I tightened my grip on the rock and reached out for him, taking hold of his hand as he blasted past. The flow was almost too powerful, threatening to suck us both back in, but with a scream of defiance, I reeled him close. It was just as well. Almost as soon as he'd lifted himself up out of the water, a muzzle broke free, splintered teeth snapping shut inches from his heel. The dog threw itself at us, its raw flesh reflecting the dying light from Gary's lamp. But there was no bank, no shore for it to gain purchase. It clung onto the rock for what seemed like forever, its jaws thrashing wildly. Then the other dog sped past, snared fast in the current and whining. It smacked straight into the first, knocking it from the rock and sending them both careening into the darkness.
"Gary, wait up!"
wheezed Z as we listened to the whimpered, snarling fade.
"We can't see a thing down here!"
God only knows how I had the strength to climb. Yet somehow I did, dredging something up from deep inside me, some primal strength. Each time I reached for the next handhold or foothold, I felt like I was back in the prison gym, fighting the skulls, kicks and blows raining down on me. But that's the funny thing about pain. The more familiar it becomes, the easier it is to tune it out. I noticed that the light up ahead was no longer moving. Gary had reached the ledge, and although he didn't offer either of us a hand as we pulled ourselves over the lip of the rock, he did move his leg out of the way so we could clamber up. From Gary, that was the equivalent of him saying he loved us. Z collapsed, and I sat next to him, peering back down at the river. It was lost in shadow, its undying roar the only thing letting me know that it was still there.
"Where we gonna go now?" spat Gary eventually. "We've lost the dogs, but where's the way out, little man? You messed this up big."
I ignored him, trying to get a sense of our surroundings. The ledge we were on was narrow but stretched out along the length of the cavern. Bathed in weak light, the rough walls were made up of pockets of darkness that looked like those in the chipping holes. Most were probably nothing more than grooves in the rock, but there had to be a passageway or something up ahead.
"Had to be," my mind echoed.
There didn't have to be anything. This wasn't part of the prison. It hadn't been designed by an architect and carved out of the rock by logical minds. It was a river, more than a mile beneath the surface, sculpted by the cruel and chaotic forces of nature. Nobody had ever set foot down here before. We were the first, and it wasn't going to let us go.
No way out,
Gary mumbled to himself, rocking back and forth and making shadows sweep across the cabin.
Got us killed. Got us killed bad.
No, we'll find a way, said Z, sitting up and putting a hand on my shoulder.
You got us out of furnace, right? And nobody has ever done that before. We'll find a way. I know it.
I wanted to agree, wanted to get up and charge down the ledge and find that escape route. But I knew in my gut that Gary was right.
We buried alive down here, he said. Buried alive.
And we were. The warden may have locked us up in furnace, but I was the one who had arranged our execution, because this wasn't a way out at all. It was a tomb.
Buried alive. When you're scared, and I mean really scared, not just hearing a noise in the night or standing toe-to-toe with someone twice your size who wants to pound you into the earth, it feels as if you're being injected with darkness. It's like black water, as cold as ice, settling in your body where your blood and marrow used to be, pushing every other feeling out as it fills you from your feet to your scalp. It leaves you with nothing. That's how I felt sitting on the ledge. It wasn't the dogs that terrified me, and it wasn't Gary, or the thought of being caught again. It wasn't even the idea that I might die shivering helplessly on the rock like some strange fungus. No, it was the thought of what might happen after death. I could accept my life ending, because there would be no more fear and no more pain. But what if death wasn't the end? What if some part of me, my soul perhaps, lived on? And what if it was trapped here in the guts of furnace for the rest of time, never again to see the sun or hear the sound of laughter? It was that which made it seem like my body was a pit devoid of life and light. It was that which was driving me toward madness. "We move that way," I said, more to chase away the voices in my head than because I had a plan. Light burned my retinas as Gary turned to look at me. I stuck my hand out, pointing down the slope in the same direction the river ran below. "Gary, you've got the light. You take the lead. Make sure you don't miss any passageways. One of them might be our way out."
"Might," snapped Gary, as menacing as a pistol shot.
But he obviously didn't have any better ideas as he scrambled to his feet and turned his head in the direction I was still pointing. His helmet lamp illuminated the narrow ledge ahead, which seemed to disappear into darkness far too quickly.
"Just take it slowly," I stammered, as a shiver passed through my body, making every nerve end burn. "Watch your feet. If you fall over the edge, then we're all screwed."
Gary didn't answer, keeping his head forward as he shuffled carefully along the rock. His feet kicked scraps of stone over into the void, and I tried to ignore the sound of them hitting the foaming spray below. The river had let us live twice now, but I was willing to bet it wouldn't show the same mercy if we tumbled in again.
"Come on," I whispered, offering Z a hand and hauling him up, "before that idiot leaves us behind."
We eased our way after Gary, treading carefully in his shadow and doing our best to peer past his enormous shoulders. Each step he took made the gloom along the wall twitch, and it was impossible not to think of the Weezers, the warden's gas mask-wearing freaks, lurching and staggering like injured birds in front of us. Every time I saw movement, my heart hammered, which wasn't a bad thing since fear seemed to be the only thing keeping it going.
"This isn't getting us nowhere," came Gary's uneven voice. "It's all the same up here. No doors or nothing."
"You were expecting a door?" I asked, unable to stop the haggard laugh breaking from my throat. He didn't reply, and he didn't turn around, but even so I swore I could feel the air thicken like he was about to explode, And he was right. No matter how many paces we took, the wall to our left and the pitch-black abyss to our right stayed exactly the same. Each stumbled movement forward brought a fraction more light to the ledge up ahead, but it also pinched it off right behind us. We could have been walking on a treadmill. The image brought back my terror of becoming a ghost trapped here for all eternity. Weakened to the point of insanity by everything that had happened, my mind started telling me that I was already dead and that this was my personal hell. And it could have been. I mean, more than anything, our progress through the darkness reminded me of the times I had broken into houses and crept through the shadows while the owners were asleep, desperately trying not to make a noise and always panicking that I wouldn't be able to escape in an emergency. What could be a better punishment for a criminal like me than to be doomed to an eternity walking along a ledge in a pocket of light and air that constantly felt like it was shrinking?
"Watch it!" came Gary's voice as I smacked into his back. "You trying to push me over? I'll gut you if you try it. You hear me?"
I'd been so wrapped up in my own mortality that I hadn't noticed him come to a halt. I mumbled an apology, bracing a hand on the wall before stepping up on my tiptoes to see what had stopped him. The view was identical to the one that had greeted us for the last few minutes, except for a jagged scar running vertically down the wall. It cut straight through the ledge, splitting it in two and resembling a crude crucifix, like this was a massive cathedral and we were trespassing on the altar.
"Go on then," I said, no longer caring about antagonizing him. "That might be it."
"You go," he replied, his voice shaky. "Don't feel right."
I wondered what had spooked him. The ledge ahead didn't look any more treacherous than it had all along, except further up, where it had been sheared in half. The gaping wound in the wall was dark, but shadows couldn't hurt us. Then I heard it, a noise rising up above the numbing roar of the river below. It was so loud that I didn't know how none of us had noticed it before. A whistle that rose in pitch like an old kettle before sputtering out and vanishing into its own echo.
"It's the wind," I said, but I was so unsure that it came out like a question.
"That means we're near the surface, right?" came Z's voice from behind me. I shook my head.
"There's wind in these caves just like there's water. Doesn't mean anything."
The whistle came again, closer and louder and longer. Another rose up on the back of it, a shrill call that sounded more like a scream before being sucked back down below the thunder of the water. "It's wind," I thought to myself, trying to hammer the words into my head so hard that I wouldn't question them. "The wind in the tunnels, caused by pressure changes in the water." But I knew that whatever it was we were hearing, it wasn't made by anything as innocent as air. More whistles, three or four this time, fighting each other for supremacy. Gary swore and turned to me, his pupils so large and the whites of his eyes glowing so fiercely around them that he looked like an animal. He whispered something that I couldn't make out, but I knew what his lips had spelled. "Weezers."
"Is it them?"
asked Z, almost crying.
"Please, God, not them."
I shook my head until all thoughts of the freaks in gas masks had disappeared, then took a step forward. Easing myself past Gary, I made my way toward the crack in the rock, my heart so far up my throat that I could feel its beat on my tonsils.
"It might not be them," I said over my shoulder as I reached the edge of the precipice.
"It could be anything. We're just afraid, paranoid. Forget about the noise, okay? We've just got to find a way out. We'll worry about the wheezes when we have to." A clutter of remarks met the end of my sentence, but nobody argued with it. I took that as a good sign, grabbing the edge of the cracked rock and peering around it. The scar was maybe 2 meters wide, the ledge continuing on the other side, but too far away for us to jump to it. Without the light, I couldn't make out where, if anywhere, the crack in the rock led.
Gary, I need the lamp.
Instead of handing it to me, he walked to my side, his rough hands on my arm, a promise that if he tripped and fell, he'd take me with him. Tentatively, he leaned out and aimed the fluttering beam into the shadows. They parted reluctantly, as if this was the first time they'd ever seen light. The crevice thinned to a point. There was no passageway.
Look up, I commanded.
If I'd spoken to Gary like this in Furnace, then he'd have shanked me without thinking twice. But down here, things were different. He tilted his head back, rocking unsteadily on the edge of the precipice and digging his fingers into my bruises. The pain was worth it, though, as the weak glow picked out another peak of rock that led off into shadows. I had my mouth open to point this out when the noise came again, and the way it dropped screeching from the very darkness I was looking at made it clear where it was coming from.
Find another way, said Gary, his voice dead.
There is no... I started, but before I could finish, his hands had left my overalls and were around my neck. He swiveled, twisting his body and mine until I was scrabbling for purchase on the lip of the ledge. I could feel the cold air of the river below me, like an icy tongue trying to pull me in, and for a moment I thought I was falling.
I said find another way, screamed Gary, or you go swimming.
Gary, yelled Z, but I didn't fight. Part of me wanted him to let go, drop me to my death. Part of me wanted to become a ghost just so I could see him struggle to find a way out without me, just so I could laugh as he slowly starved to death at the bottom of the world. I almost said as much, but thankfully I managed to keep my mouth shut. You don't call the bluff of people like Gary.
There is no other way, I repeated, never taking my eyes off his. We can't go back. We can't make that jump to the other side of the ledge. We don't have a choice.
What's that down there? Said Z. I dropped my gaze, and Gary saw that as a sign of submission. Hauling me back onto the ledge, he pushed Z aside and looked down into the crack. I joined them, peering past their tangled limbs to see a ragged circle of darkness a few meters below us.
That's a tunnel, right?
It might not be, I answered. The hole in the rock didn't look much wider than any of us, and the thought of climbing into it, not knowing where it led or how much more it shrank, made my stomach churn.
We're better off heading up anyway. Even if that is a tunnel, it looks like it goes deeper.
Doesn't matter, said Gary. Not going anywhere near the Weezers.
There was no arguing with him. With another eerie dance of light and shadow, he started climbing down the vertical scar, grunting as he eased himself toward the hole.
This is wrong, I said to Z. I've got a really bad feeling about this. We should be heading up.
But even as I said it, another guttural scream skidded down the wall like fingernails on a blackboard, and before it had ended, Z was following Gary. I would happily have left them to it, so great was my terror of crawling even deeper into our stone sarcophagus. But if I let them go, I'd be alone in the darkness, and that would truly have driven me to insanity.
This is wrong, I said, again to deaf ears. Then I grabbed hold of the rock, swung my body round, and descended into the abyss.
The throat. It seemed to take forever to climb down that fractured wall. It was so dark that I had to run my fingers over the slick, cold rock to find a grip, and pretty much every step I took, one of my feet would slip, threatening to plunge me into the void. I felt like a piece of bait, a maggot pinned on a hook and squirming in pain as I was lowered toward the throat of some nightmare predator. By the time I'd reached the hole, three more haunting calls had dropped from the ledge above, each louder and more frenzied than the last. My damned imagination projected the image of the Weezers onto the stone in front of me, hundreds of them swarming over each other like flies over a corpse. It was crazy, of course. There couldn't have been that many of them. But the growing volume of the shrieks made it clear that the crowd up there was swelling.
"Move it!"
came a voice from below. I assumed it was Gary's, but when I angled my head down, I saw Z directly beneath me, clinging to the lip of the darkness and gesturing me on with his head. Gary was next to him, on the other side of the opening. I wasn't sure why neither of them had climbed in, but I should have guessed.
"Ladies first," hissed Gary,
when I scrabbled down the last stretch and braced my foot in the hole.
"You've got the light,"
I protested. I should have saved my breath.
"Won't tell you again," the bigger boy growled. "Get in there."
I looked at Z, but he didn't meet my eyes. Not that I blamed him. The tunnel was barely wide enough for any of us to clamber into, the same width and height as a coffin. Cursing with every foul word I knew, I dropped past Z and thrust my head into the shadows. The air inside had none of the freshness of the river. It was hot and heavy, like the breath of some ancient creature, like it had been back in the prison.
"This is wrong," I said again, the darkness swallowing my words so quickly that neither Gary nor Z seemed to hear them.
Biting my lip to stop myself from screaming, I eased my shoulders into the throat and shuffled until my entire body was inside. The panic set in immediately. The feeling that there was no oxygen and that the rock pressed against my stomach and my back was closing in, crushing my lungs. I tried to reverse. Better to fall to my death in the river or be caught by the wheezes than to die cowering in some hall, clawing for the last scrap of air. But Gary was already halfway in. The light from his helmet barely had enough room to squeeze past me, and by its strained yellow fingers, I could see the red ragged walls of the tunnel shrinking in on each other ahead. I thought back to the things that had happened in general population, the main prison. I remembered the time Z and I had been chased by the dogs, rescued by Donovan, the day I'd nearly been caught by Moleface as I crawled free of room 2, the fight between me and the skulls in the arena, the moment we'd made our break, Toby and I held up by giant hands as the fuse burned down toward the explosive gloves. At the time, each one of those events had been terrifying, and I'd been convinced that death had finally caught up with me. As I look back now, however, everything that had happened up top seemed like a game, like a school trip. I wished I was back in my cell, Donovan by my side, laughing about Z having to clean the toilets or something. Because compared to the guts of furnace, to the merciless river, and this gullet of ancient rock, Gen Pop was a country club.
"Go," Gary said, his voice muffled.
I took as big a breath as I was able, then eased my way deeper, my elbows grating against the stone as they pushed me along. With every movement, the claustrophobia threatened to consume me. And several times, I had to stop as the fear rang bells in my brain, making my entire body convulse. I don't know how long we were in that tunnel. It could have been a lifetime. Each agonizing inch seemed to take hours, and every time I managed to wrench my body forward, I thought it would be my eternal resting place. Somewhere in my mind, I pictured what would happen if I did just die. Gary and Z would have to retreat backward down the pipe. Then I imagined Gary's fate if both Z and I were to perish right here, trapped between two corpses as the darkness came to collect him. Despite the horror of the thought, or maybe because of it, I started to laugh again, shallow gasps that sounded more like sobs.
"You see anything?"
came Gary's voice after what might have been an hour or a day or a minute.
"Air's getting thin in here. Better be a way out ahead."
"Nothing," I replied after another age. "Tunnel's dropping." It was, the angle getting steeper, sloping downward. It was narrowing too. I could feel its cold embrace on both my shoulders, its knuckles on my scalp.
"We have to go back. There's no room."
"Can't go back,"
came Z's voice, faint and echoey like it was coming from a mile away.
"No way.
We can't turn around.
Right. We go on. Just go on,
Gary said, although his voice was a whisper broken up by the breaths he snatched in after every word. This was hell for me, but for him, with his tree trunk chest, it must have been infinitely worse. I wiped the sweat from my brow and obeyed, feeling the blood rush to my head as I wormed down the slope. The tunnel was becoming less smooth, blades of ragged stone jutting out at every angle and threatening to slice my arms to shreds. It only got worse up ahead, the broken walls forming a knot of stone that was so tight I couldn't see what lay beyond it.
Dead end,
I said, shuddering to a halt.
There's no way we'll get past that.
Don't stop,
Gary barked, as if by shouting the words he could somehow weaken the blockage ahead. I felt his hands on my legs, pinching and pushing, and I could picture his fat lips sucking down all the air. It was all I could do not to lash out, kick him until he wasn't breathing anymore, but instead I opened my mouth and flooded my lungs with oxygen until the panic had gone. Then I shuffled onward, praying we'd be able to find a way through. I don't know if anything heard me. I can't see how. I mean, we were crawling through a stone coffin with more than a mile of solid rock and a hell of a lot more worthy prayers above our heads. But when we reached the knot, I saw that it wasn't as tight as I first thought. The tunnel was blocked by a shard of stone hanging from the ceiling like a guillotine blade, and a short distance past that was a solid mound that rose from the floor. If they'd been any closer together, then we would have rotted right there, but it looked like there was just enough room to weasel past. I pushed my head beneath the blade, its unforgiving edge scraping the hair from my skull and gouging its mark along my neck. I pushed hard with my feet, yelling in pain as I wrapped my arms around the mound and pulled myself up. For a moment, I thought the angle was too much, that my spine would just snap, but then I squeezed my bony backside through the gap and was free. To my utter relief, the tunnel seemed to have widened out on this side of the knot, and as Gary's head emerged from the twisted rock, I saw why. The throat had opened up into a cavern, so big that the writhing helmet lamp failed to illuminate a floor, a ceiling, or even the walls. It was like we'd emerged in deepest, darkest space, with only a crumbling ledge between us and infinity.
"Give me a hand!"
wheezed Gary, his words close to cries of distress.
"I'm stuck!"
It would have been so easy to leave him there, caught fast in a bear trap of solid stone, to steal the helmet and just run. Only I could hear Z's frantic cries squeezed from the tunnel, begging us to hurry up. I knelt and grabbed Gary's trembling arms, feeling the hot, sticky sheen of blood on his skin. He burst free with such a comical speed that I swore I could hear a pop. His momentum caught me off guard, and together we tumbled down a slope and crunched to a halt on the cavern floor. I was the lucky one, landing on Gary's chest so hard that a fountain of blood arced up from his lips, silhouetted against the flickering light. He coughed wetly, then shoved me off, groaning as he sat up.
"Did that on purpose?"
he said, but the words carried none of their usual force. Gary was a tank, but something bad had happened inside him. You couldn't bleed like that and still have all your guts intact.
"You okay?"
I asked. He looked up at me, his face barely visible beneath the lamp on his helmet, and his expression seemed like one of surprise.
"Gonna be," he said eventually. "Gonna be fine. Soon as we get out of here."
"Guys,"
came a voice from above our heads, further up than I thought.
"How'd you get down there? I can't see anything."
"We rolled," I suggested.
"Rolled?"
echoed Z. I could hear him muttering as he tried to scramble down the slope. There was a clatter of stones on the floor, followed by a squawk as he fell. He staggered, then found his feet, chuckling with relief.
"Thank Christ we made it out of there.
I thought I was going to die with Gary's butt in my face. Hey, man, you all right?
Gary snorted, and I wondered if it had been a laugh. He wiped his hand across his mouth, giving himself a bandana of blood, then tried to stand. It took him a couple of attempts, and by the time he was upright, he was swaying and panting equally hard.
Just took a few hits, that's all. Not the first time I've had the crap beaten out of me. That river was a pansy compared to my old man.
Z and I exchanged a look that neither of us could really interpret, then turned our eyes in the direction of Gary's beam. The darkness in the cavern was so profound that it seemed to devour the sickly light before it could travel more than a couple of meters. But every now and again, as it swept across the floor, the golden edge of a stalagmite would rise up from the shadows before fading as the search continued.
"You reckon there's a way out from here?"
said Z, helping me to my feet. I didn't dignify his stupid question with an answer, just followed Gary as he set off across the cavern. Each step we took echoed from the ceiling. God only knew how far above our heads, the muffled sound like the patter of giant raindrops. It was enough to make me smile until I realized there was something wrong with the sound.
"Stop a minute,"
I whispered, halting and grabbing Gary's shirt to make sure he did the same. I felt Z's hand on my shoulder, but despite the fact we were all as silent and still as the stone pillars around us, the sound of footsteps didn't recede. There was the distinct slap of bare feet on wet rock, followed by its echo. Two steps, three, four, and then silence.
"What was that?"
I asked, realizing that my question was as pointless as Z's.
"Probably just water dripping," Z suggested. "That's how these things form, stalagmites and stalactites. I saw it in a documentary once with my mum and dad. Know how to remember the difference between the two?"
There was no answer except for the patter of light steps, faster this time, like someone running.
"That's not water," said Gary, turning and pointing the lamp behind us.
The whole cave seemed to move as the beam swept around, shadows coming to life like beetles. More steps, off to the left, the clack of insect legs.
"There,"
said Z, pointing in the direction of the sound.
"No, further over."
The lamp lurched, picking out another needle of stone that rose from the floor nearby. Only this one had two silver eyes which reflected the light back at us like distant planets. The shadow screamed, a vast wet maw opening in the misshapen lump where its head should be. Then it lunged forward. In the split second before Gary ripped the light away, I made out a body of glistening sinew, packed with muscles too large for its skin and stitched together like a rag doll. I assumed it was a dog, only it was pounding toward us on 2 feet and reaching its skeletal fingers out for our throats. Then the darkness of the cavern washed over it, leaving only the relentless slap of its feet and the gargle of blood in its throat to let us know death was approaching. Daylight. I might have had a chance,